Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I'm your host, Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock, and joining me is Rob Williams of Four Quarter Fridays, SEC Sunday Night, basically the utility guy. I think I heard you and JV talking about the other day, but Rob's all over the place. He's going to high schools, he's talking to coaches, talking to kids. He's really wearing a lot of hats. But Rob, how you doing tonight?
I'm fantastic, Matt. It's great to be here. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, all the women in our lives. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. And Matt Anderson, ladies and gentlemen, the late night Gamecock with a little I don't know if he's got a little cold or what's going on, but we're feeling a little late night soul in there tonight, Matt. Maybe we've turned on the slow jams. We're gonna get it going. We're gonna talk a little bit of Gamecock athletics here tonight with the late night Gamecock himself, Matt Anderson.
Man, it's a late night show right now. It's we listen in your car driving down a mountain road or something like that. So just a little backstory. My wife and I went with her family to the beach. So we've been at the beach for the last 7 days. And of course, the second day there, one of my brother-in-laws started not feeling good. So my wife was basically Nurse Ratchet the entire week, just handing everybody meds, allergies, stuff like that. But I'm getting through it. But it's not as bad as it was, man, like 6, 7 months ago. I could barely do this show and talk.
Well,
But
hey, I kind of like it. I'm not gonna lie. It adds another element to the show and gives you a great sound. A lot of times people say that somebody has a voice for radio and or a face for radio because their voice is there and maybe their face isn't. I feel like I'm the opposite. You know, am I allowed to say this about myself?
go ahead,
I don't think
man.
my voice I think my voice sounds terrible on air, but my face looks great. So I appreciate the fact that we're on YouTube.
Dude, Rob, like, honest to God, and I know we're gonna get into some Gamecock football, but I used to hate the sound of my voice on any type of recording until I started doing this. And now I'm in year three, and I can, because I mean, I listen to myself try and get better, right?
You gotta watch film, baby.
Yeah, watch the film. But man, we got so much to get to tonight. We're going to try and touch as many sports as we can before 8 o'clock when Rob has to hop off for Sunday night or SEC Sunday night. We'll eat the frog, if you know the saying, or eat the elephant, whatever it is, one bite at a time. But baseball got swept by Alabama. Now 30 losses on the season. I think this is the first time a Gamecock baseball team's ever had 30 losses. So we're just going to skip over baseball. There's nothing good to talk about. There's going to be a coaching search. There's going to be a lot. And I know that JB will have you covered on the morning show the rest of this week. Basketball, Rob, is set to add two international players. Been playing the game online with some posters on the Big Spur and people trying to figure out, just tell me what continent or what country. I can't do it right now. There's just so much that happens with these international guys, as you know, Rob, where contracts and professional opportunities and then getting their name out to other programs. So for that reason, a lot of things have to standard wraps, but also they have to do some paperwork. There's a lot of things that have to happen to even get them over here. But what I can tell you is it's two positions of need. They are going to fit in this roster. I personally am very excited about one. We'll see about the other. But that still leaves three spots and, five if you don't include these overseas guys. Rob, looking at this team right now, what do you think that the Gamecocks still need to add in these five spots?
Well, I mean, it's kind of stating the obvious, I think, a little bit, but a more dominant post force wouldn't hurt, right? Because right now there's a lot of improved shooting, if you just look at the numbers, but not having a true big guy, I think in some cases gets you in trouble. Can you play that way without one? Sure. Positionless basketball is certainly a thing, and guys who can move all around and not be a force on the block is kind of the way a lot of people want to play these days. But when you look at the SEC, there are certainly some teams, like a Ruben Chinyelu comes to mind at Florida, where you're going to run into some teams that have a really athletic guy down low. Georgia's losing theirs to the portal, so we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. So across the league, occasionally you're going to get that guy, right? So somebody like that, we saw the Gamecocks a few years ago make the NCAA tournament under Lamont Paris and run into an Oregon team in that first matchup that not only had Jermaine Cousinard, who went off, but they also had a matchup nightmare down low in a wiry 6'11 guy that is just jacked. And I think that that is something that's been missing from this team for a while. The other thing, Matt, is that I would like to see a little more scoring. Obviously, you got Corey Mincy, who comes to mind when I think about somebody who is more of a slashing, mid-range, volume type of guy, which you've had that type of dude in this system before. Maybe Davion Hanna becomes that type of guy in a growing role, but you're not looking for that out of AB, out of Wisconsin. You're not really going to get that from Cam Heidi. So I have some questions about who's going to bring the volume. So when it comes to that, you know, you're never going to hurt by bringing in another guard who can create. You know, Mincy, we haven't seen him do it at this level consistently to create, and we have indications that perhaps he's going to be more of a distributor and balance out the way that he plays the game more so than just trying to look for his own shot or getting the ball distributed to him per se. So, you know, that sounds like a layup, pun fully intended, type of answer right there, Matt, is to give you, there needs to be a dominant guy down low and there needs to be more scoring around the perimeter. But I think that's kind of it. When you have a team that performed like it did last year, it's okay to fit the mold and the cliches. The obvious answers are the obvious answers, I think. So there are definitely some there are some answers already that they've gotten out of the portal, but I'm still looking for a few more. And these guys in Europe and also the remaining three spots kind of open it up for me to see what is Lamont Paris's vision for this team in 2026. I think we know what the end goal is because there's kind of a minimum floor requirement, and that's the NCAA tournament. And that's going to get easier here in the future to get into the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, I think the way this roster is constructed should tell us how the Gamecocks are going to play basketball. And is it going to look like we have come accustomed to Lamont Paris offenses and defenses looking, or are we going to see some kind of tweaks and changes to be more competitive in the SEC?
I think you hit the nail on the head for a lot of that, Rob. I mean, there's five spots. I think you need at least two or three more big men, and you need the kind of guys you were talking about, because you need to be able to rebound. That's just been terrible the past 2 years. 2 years ago when Colin Murray Boyle was on the floor, it wasn't as bad. And even if Josh Gray could go get you four or five rebounds a game, but they've got to find some answers there. I think they probably still need a 3-and-D type guy. You can never have too many of those. And I really think, to your point, they need a creator. They just need another guard. They need another point guard, because Mincy isn't a pure point guard, but he can maybe do it. So we'll see how they figure all that out with five spots left. Speaking of finding things out, if you're watching us right now, you're not watching the softball College World Series bracket release. That's happening right now. As soon as we get some information on that, we'll definitely share it with you guys. I know there'll be lots of conversation around it leading up to May 15th, you know, this opening weekends, and Rob and I are definitely excited for it. And then football is churning, y'all. Football never stops in the SEC. Football never stops in South Carolina. We will have about half the show tonight dedicated just to football. But before we jump into our main topics regarding more of the roster, Rob, Shane Beamer sent out two welcome homes over the weekend. One of them was revealed today. What can you tell us about the offensive lineman the Gamecocks picked up?
Yeah, so Jackson Elston is going to be listed as an interior offensive lineman from Oxford High School in Alabama. Now, as far as size is concerned, Hayes Fawcett was the release with On Three. He was listed at 6'5", 314-ish, I believe. His huddle lists him at 6'6", 309, so maybe there's some wiggle room in there. Maybe it was a different pair of cleats, not exactly sure. But what I can tell you is that this staff is starting to go after a little bit lighter, it appears, on the offensive line. And I'm not saying anything groundbreaking or new, but just anybody who may be listening or watching right now that has not been in tune with everything happening on ITG throughout the week. JC has said it. I'm sure Jamie has said it, but it's apparent that the staff is going after a different body type, and that is likely due to the speed of the scheme. Now, Elston is probably going to project to move inside. He does play left tackle at Oxford, and so you're able to see his feet and how he moves around. I was actually reviewing his tape before we got on the air here, Matt, and I think that he definitely has the size, and I think that he has all the tools that are going to be needed to kind of mold him into what they're looking for. You know what I mean? Like, there are a few things that I think need to be cleaned up. But overall, I think that what this tells us, more so than just the prospect himself, On3 actually has him at 6'4.5", 321, just for reference. A three-star prospect. The Gamecocks beat out primarily Arkansas and Georgia Tech. He also had offers for Auburn and Georgia in there. Look, I think that I think it tells us more about the direction that they're going from an offensive standpoint than it does about the individual player, if that makes sense. And I think that's a good piece of information. Everybody that they've gone after from an offensive line recruiting standpoint in this cycle looks different than what we've seen in the past. I will echo JC because he's not here to say it, but I think it needs to be said on every airway that we have that is speaking to fans who are tuned into recruiting and paying attention to how this roster is constructed. Do not be fooled by the fact that there are not blue chip recruits coming in like there were on the offensive line. Apparently that didn't do much to translate to the field, Matt. Okay. There's been a lot of 4- and 5-star guys, but there was not a lot of production under the former staff on offense and what they put on the front there. So I think that it is more beneficial to trust the track record of a guy like Kendall Briles, of a guy like Randy Clements, of a guy like Jason Smith, and what they can go and do. They are getting guys that fit what they want to do, and fit is better than an overall star rating or what a guy is capable of, because guys that fit in the system are going to perform the best.
And on top of that, Rob, I'll just add that with the portal now and basically every year on a one-year contract – I mean, every player on a one-year contract, they're going to be, you know, plugging and playing a lot of positions on a year-to-year basis. And we all know that offensive linemen really shouldn't be playing unless they're just super studs until their second, third year in a program anyway. So I'm starting to think this offensive line class will be every bit of 5, 6, 7 guys, because I think they understand the need for development. And then if they have, you know, some gaps, they'll fill them in the portal. I'm not worried about that. They just picked up 8 offensive linemen, and they're going for a 9th in the portal right now. So, I'm never going to, you know, throw shade at a 3-star offensive lineman or even a 2-star offensive lineman for that matter. But we also have an announcement from one of the kids that was on campus last weekend. We talked about him on the show last week. You can go back and hear about our conversation about Braden Tyson. But Rob, I think he is set to commit on May 15th, and I feel decent about the chances for the Gamecocks right now, better than I did leading into the official visit.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 3:30 p.m. Eastern on May 15th at his high school. That's Brookwood in Snellville, Georgia. Braden Tyson set to commit. There are a few teams still in this, and he announced it's Florida State, Purdue, Rutgers, South Carolina. And I'll read you the quote that Chad Simmons had today. He says, "I've been to all 4 schools, so I know what they bring. All 4 schools have been high on my list for a while. I have a good relationship with coaches at each school, and I see a great opportunity at each one." On South Carolina, he mentioned Coach Drayton develops guys and Coach Beamer keeps it real. That is where that's what South Carolina is about. I like what they've got going and how the coaches have gotten to know me. Look, at the end of the day, it is a relationships business. Some people don't want to hear that. It's become a money business, and we're not here to hide that or like sweep it under the rug. But there are multiple factors that go into a recruitment, and I think that the reason we see Shane Beamer continue to keep momentum and even grow momentum after a year like the Gamecocks had last year, on top of the fact that the resources are there, the facilities are there, the fan base is there. You know, you have to have all those things to get into the game and into the conversation. But when recruits come on campus and they spend time with this coaching staff, they see something that Braden Tyson highlighted right there. They see something authentic and genuine and real about this coaching staff who genuinely cares about you as a person, wants you to become better as a player and a person off the field, and they appreciate the authenticity that they're getting. I've talked to recruits who've had conversations with coaches and will straight up call it out. It feels slimy. It feels like a salesman. It feels like a used car guy. Like, when they talk to Shane Beamer, as we know, that's not what they're getting, and he's not going to hire people on his staff that are going to give that pitch either. This is who they are, and they truly care about the kids. You know, I'm with you. I think that the Gamecocks have a really good shot here, and this kid is something else when it comes to the tape, okay? And you can look at measurables and all of that, but just turn it on. Okay, just turn it on and you'll be able to see the way that he runs is violent. And that's what we like to see. Okay, he 6'1", 215, and if you turn it on, you're gonna see him. He's a high 3-star, right there at the 4-star range product. Okay. I really like the kid. We see over here in the chat box. This comment has been made multiple times. Real USC says Lattimore style. There is a little bit of his tape that resembles Marcus Lattimore at times. Obviously not the same player. We would never put those expectations on somebody ahead of time. That would be like the expectations that got put on Arch Manning last year. They're unattainable. Mm-hmm. You're going to set a bar so high that somebody can't reach it. But yes, there are shades of a running style at times that looks like a Marcus Lattimore. What I like about him, Matt, is just, like I said, the violence that he runs with, because you almost can't teach that inner drive to love to hit somebody and initiate the contact. And a lot of running backs who maybe don't mind contact, but they're going to be more elusive, or they're going to rely on speed. And I think this guy has it. But sometimes you just see some power in there. I think that's one of the things that we know about Matt Fuller, is that early on in his time at South Carolina, we saw him as a short yardage back. Now we've seen him develop into more of a well-rounded back. We saw the speed against LSU last year. I had a source tell me that Matt Fuller walked away from a confirmed 4-4-2 defender in the spring this year. So I think that when you see a guy like Braden Tyson, who comes in and starts off with the power, starts off with the boom, you can develop and grow in some of these other areas. But that tells me something about his mentality and how he approaches the game.
And that's absolutely, you know, what you're looking for and what Stan Drayton's looking for as well, because running back, and coaches will tell you this, running back is one of the hardest positions to coach and one of the most underappreciated, because a lot of the time it's like, it's just a Reggie Bush. Like, what can I teach you? There's nothing I can teach you that you're going to do that's going to make you more effective than what you're doing right now. So, yeah, run to this side of the field, then run to that side of the field. Like, you're faster and better and quicker, you know. But I think the big question that's going to be on everyone's mind, if Braden does in fact pick South Carolina, which I'll go ahead and say, you know, you look at these official visits and you can do some internet detective work yourself. He didn't have any more official visits scheduled till May 29th. To Rob's point, he already kind of seen all these schools, knew what they had to offer. So, I mean, just read the tea leaves there, folks. But the big question is going to be, how does this impact Trey Segura at Burns? And I don't think it impacts him at all. I think they're two different types of running backs. I think that Trey is going to be scared of any competition at all. And South Carolina is still hot and heavy for Trey Segura as well. So don't think that this is going to be a situation where, oh, well, they picked one or the other, or Trey Segura gave some inclination that he wasn't still considering South Carolina heavily.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that Trey is going to be afraid of any competition, and rightfully so. You know, I think that he can walk into a running back room that's on his list and be right towards the top of the list in terms of just what his raw ability is and his skill set in terms of a well-rounded back. So, you know, I would be high on both of these guys. And I think South Carolina, to your point, is still hot and heavy on Trey Segura. And I think that if they can land both, then that's going to be a major win in everybody's book. You also have the Aiden Gibson commitment this week, but we've kind of reported we think that's going to go the way of either Penn State or Rutgers, even though South Carolina is in the top group there. So we'll see kind of where that ends up. He commits on the 12th.
So the last thing I'll say really quick with Trey Segura and Braden, everything Rob talked about earlier, where you're having these conversations on your official visit, nobody's blindsided by this. That you can't blindside recruits in this day and age and expect to hold on to a commitment. These conversations have likely been had. And if you see the timeline from when, you know, the Gamecocks probably aren't going to go after Aiden anymore, you can kind of see, you know, where this direction went. But Rob, we got to get on to a couple, our first main topic of the night. So really enjoyed that opening here. But I have one of my favorite concepts in fantasy football is called level jumpers. And so in fantasy football, it's like, okay, a guy being drafted in the eighth round could end up performing like a fourth rounder. So what I like to do here is kind of think about players, and we're going to go wide receiver, tight end, so just pass catchers, defensive end, defensive tackle, linebacker, and secondary. And these are going to be players that we're going to talk about who either, you know, were redshirted last year, didn't play much last year, you know, had to wait their turn, or players that played a lot last year, and we think they can, you know, potentially move up to a starter, all SEC, NFL. So we're just going to talk about some level jumpers here at a couple different positions. I'll go ahead and start, Rob. And the biggest one for me, I'm going to go to pass catcher. I got two of them here, but I'll start with Mo Brown. And Rob and I have not exchanged lists, so I don't know who's on his. He doesn't know who's on mine. But I feel like Mo Brown last year was just understanding how to play tight end for the first time, learning on the fly. We talk about all the God-given ability that the running back Braden has that we just spoke about. But, like, Mo has all of that in the tight end's body. And he's violent. He's physical. And we all remember what happened last or 2 years ago with Josh Simon and Lenore Sellers and that connection that they had as well. So I think that Mo Brown could be someone that could sneak up and maybe be all SEC, maybe even make an NFL roster.
Yeah, I'm going to oppose you actually directly because in the pass catcher department, I have Mike Tyler. But I think your point.
Harrison agrees with you in the chat box. Throw it up there. Give Rob some support.
I think that your premise is correct, that the tight end will be used, that you're going to have a pass catching tight end that's going to continue to emerge. I think Brady Hunt has probably got that top spot locked down, but we had on the ITG newsletter several weeks ago a roundtable of some thoughts between JC, Jamie, and myself. And Jamie and I both had Mike Tyler in this conversation in terms of tight ends that are going to kind of take a jump or break out this year. I've heard nothing but good things about him. I was going off of a couple of nuggets, but just more kind of intuition and taking a good stab at it at that point. But through the spring, we were hearing a lot about Mike Tyler, really athletic kind of pass catching type of tight end out of Hammond, right there in Columbia, beat out LSU for him. So I think now this is year three for him, which allows him to kind of really start to step in and get some things done in terms of production. That room is extremely interesting, though, and I know that JB had a great tight end article on the Big Spur this week if anybody hasn't checked that out.
Yeah, so we'll see. I think it'd be a good thing if all these tight ends perform above expectations. And Mike Tyler, man, he has everything you want from a physical traits characteristic standpoint. I mean, he's a guy that just probably needed a year or two to get his feet under him. So in pass catchers, Rob, give me one of yours that you think could level up or make a jump.
Yeah. So you have this group of receivers. We talk tight ends, right? So if we're talking wide receivers, you have this whole group of guys that is kind of returning. And there are different answers here, I think, to the question of leveling up, Matt. You know what I mean? Because obviously one of the easy things to say would be that Nick Harbor is going to really break out and dominate. The comeback player of the year could be Mazio Bennett based on some things that we've heard about his kind of resurgence. I've been high on Mazio since he was in high school. I lived not far from where he was and had a little bit of an inside look at his development over the course of his high school career. And so I've been really high there. I've been on the record talking about Jaden Gibson. Kind of what he can bring to this group. Is that leveling up if you transfer from Oklahoma and you've been down and out with injuries for a couple of years? I don't know. I don't know how that really lands. Here's the one. I'm going to take the obvious one here. I think it's Jaden Sellers.
Yeah.
He came on late last year. He is the safety blanket for Lenoris Sellers, and that is the answer. The chemistry is already there. You could see it at points last year. I even found myself at times thinking, wow, I think Lenoris is almost forcing him the football because he feels comfortable throwing it there. But as Jaden kind of molded into a college football player over the course of the season, he worked himself more open to some of those opportunities that Lenoris was giving him midway through the season. So all that to say, we've talked a lot about how Lenoris Sellers has not had a consistent guy that he can just fall back on when the pressure comes. Instead of taking a sack or having to use his magic to get out of it, where he goes, I've got a hot route, let me get it out to this guy. I think it's his brother, Pup Sellers, and I think that's where we see a jump happen in that receiver group.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, Pup is a kid that was, you know, I think he ended up getting to a 4-star on a site or two, but he was always Lenoris Sellers' little brother, and South Carolina fans know who he is because of what he did. But I think the rest of the SEC is going to find out, and he's going to be circled on some scouting reports there. But moving on, you know, I thought about offensive line. I thought about running back. I thought about quarterback. But, I mean, what are we going to say? I mean, Lenoris Sellers clearly needs to level up from last year, and a lot of stuff wasn't his fault. Matt Fuller, we talked about. Christian Clark, we're talking about. O-line, I don't know. Shed Surratt, he'll level up. There's your guy there. But let's go ahead. Let's move over to the defensive side of the ball, Rob. And I'll give you mine right off the cuff here. And we're going to go on defensive line, defensive tackle, defensive end. Troy Pikes is my name at defensive tackle. I think that he was behind some good players last year. I think that he's probably going to, if not start, he's going to play enough snaps each game to become, you know, a name that everyone in Gamecock land knows, and not just, you know, from Clemson last year. So Troy Pikes is my guy to level up at defensive tackle.
I completely agree with you. I have Troy Pikes written down as well, but for the sake of making a different argument, I'll go with Kelby Collins here, who's a guy on his third SEC school, and he's the guy who has flashed, okay? He's going to be on the list there every time with there is a lot that he can give. I think that if he gives his best play more consistently, you're going to have a hard time keeping Kelby Collins out of this starting rotation. Now, Shane Beamer said recently they could be six deep right there. So I think that gives a lot of wiggle room in this conversation about defensive tackle, because there's going to be a lot of guys and they're going to have a lot of opportunities. And the good thing there, Matt, is that's going to keep them really fresh, and the stars are going to be able to have a lot of production if you're too deep, or even a third rotation is going to be able to really get in there and give you quality snaps. So I agree with you. I think Troy Pikes levels up. I think he becomes a solid draft pick for this defense. But I think Kelby Collins has a potential to snatch that starting spot. Just a unique body type that you can put next to Gabriel Brandlow-Dendy inside there and really do some damage.
At defensive end, I'm kind of cheating here, and it's going to be Julian Walker because he's been talked about so much. But I consider a kid that's come through spring practice to, you know, pretty much be a freshman already. And this is the type of kid that I would not be surprised at all to see a freshman all SEC right out the gate. He's tenacious. He might very well win the starting job by week one opposite Dylan Stewart. And we'll talk about Dylan Stewart here in a little bit. But, you know, I'm looking through it here. Jaquavius Dodd kind of popped up as an honorable mention. If you want to have comeback player of the year, maybe a George Wilson who can play some, spot reps. Spot snaps. But did you have anybody that snuck that stuck out to you?
Okay, so one thing that I'll say there on Julian Walker is I've gotten a lot of this, right? I've heard a lot about Julian Walker from a physical standpoint, from a mental standpoint, the makeup of who he is and how he operates. Matt, I'm gonna go actually though, if we're on the edge out there, I'm gonna go with Anthony Addison. Okay, redshirt freshman, 6'4", 230, won the most improved player of the spring for the defense this year. Okay, this is a kid that has the tools, and I think maybe took advantage of some injuries on the edge in the spring. A lot of guys were out. Okay, so that gave increased reps for some players at that position, and I think Anthony Addison is one of those guys that has the ability to really get into this rotation. If we start trying to sketch out a two deep, everybody's going to go Dylan Stewart, Julian Walker, Caleb Herring.
Mm-hmm.
Who's behind Dylan Stewart though? If we're battling out Walker and Herring, and we say we're going to flip them back and forth in the rotation on one side, who's playing on the other side? That could very well be Anthony Addison, a guy who comes from probably not on a lot of people's radar in 2025 to making some plays in the backfield for sure in 2026.
I'll tell you this, Rob. Last year, about this time, I asked someone who had been to numerous spring practices and scrimmages, and we were just talking in the summer. I was like, tell me, are you getting a little blanky there, Rob? Getting a little cold?
Yep, that's it. I'm actually moving it because it keeps like flashing in the back of my background.
I got you. But no, I talked to someone who had been to all the scrimmages, a bunch of the practices, and I said, who's the one freshman that nobody's talking about that they need to talk about? And he said, dude, he's not going to play this year. But I'm just telling you, Anthony Addison is a dude. He does not look like a freshman. He's not going to play this year, but just watch out for him. So I think you're all over it there. At linebacker, I'm going to be pretty just cut and dry here. I think this is the year that Fred Johnson, JR, becomes an all-SEC linebacker. I think he's had the tools. He's had, you know, all the talk, all the praise from us, from coaches, from sources. I think it's the year he puts it all together.
I'll go with Justin Okoronkwo here because I can't make an argument against your Fred J.R. Johnson argument there. But I wrote down Justin O because I think that when it comes to the blitzing linebacker, if I have to bet on one, he's the one that I'm betting on. You know, Clayton White is going to send somebody, and I've said it 10 times, and I'm going to keep saying it. Half of the sacks that Kyle Kennard had, or over half of them, six of his 11 and a half, were when there was a blitz and there was five or more rushing. So it wasn't just the four up front. Okay. So, and most of the time that was a linebacker. Okay. And over half of those blitzes, the linebacker was Bam Martin Scott. So in this year, who's it going to be? Out of the three, which one of those linebackers fits the mold for me the most there? I think that Justin O has the most speed. And so I'm looking at his pass rush ability. Can he be the one that is the blitz guy? I think so. So that's where I see him kind of making a jump and making an impact. You want to talk about things that stick out in people's minds for linebackers? It used to be knocking your block off back in the Ray mm-hmm. Lewis days. Now it is more at South Carolina for Sky Moore, it was interceptions. Now your linebacker they have to play in space. They have to cover sideline to sideline with a lot of speed, a lot of length. And if you can go from out there in space to tracking down one of these mobile quarterbacks and getting them on the ground behind the line of scrimmage, you're getting a sack for that, Matt. And so I think that is the impact that sticks out in fans' minds, and that's where we see Justin O make a jump this year.
It's the sideline to sideline ability. That's just what it is with Justin O. Secondary, you know, we're not going to split this into safety and DB, and we can just each pick a name or two here. But the one that actually, I'll let you go first this time, Rob.
It's easy for me on this one. It's Jazavian Currents. You want to pick a freshman. Everybody that I've talked to many sources here. This is not one, not two. I've talked to guys who have said he's got everything that you want. You can look at him and tell that the measurables are there, but looking at people who have been around this kid, who have seen him, who have watched him communicate, who have seen him in film study, who have seen him in the weight room, who have seen how he operates, he is a football junkie. He eats, sleeps, and breathes this. It's what he wants to do. It's how he wants to live his life, and he doesn't take time off with this. One source told me, or one contact told me, that they'd be surprised if he's not starting by midseason. There's been a lot made about Peyton Williams and maybe David Bucci or whoever else is back there. We've seen a jump from those guys, no doubt about it. I think this kid, Jazavian Currents, takes over, and we're gonna see a star for the next 3 years at the safety spot for South Carolina.
I'll be very honest, and I say this with all due respect to Peyton Williams and David Bucci. Honestly, Rob, man, if they can hold off Jazavian Currents, then that tells me like, wow. Cause if it's me, man, I'm just throwing Currents out there, and you got two cupcakes, man, to start the season. Yep. Like, just go ahead, get his feet wet, get him wet behind the ears, throw him out there and see what happens. For me, since you took Jazavion, I'm going to go ahead and throw out Vakari Swan. I think he has the ability to shut down one side of the field. I think that he has the mentality to play DB. I like DBs that are a little cocky, Rob. Like, I don't like the
– Agreed.
I don't like the 15-yard penalties if they happen like four or five times over, you know, six, seven games. I don't mind a 15-yard penalty every once in a while, because you're basically telling the other team, don't throw my way. You can't throw my way. It's impossible. So I think that Vakari is just going to, honest to God, man, probably be – he has potential to be all SEC two different places, I think, this year. Obviously, you know, if he's returning punts, returning kicks, and then a secondary as well. And the one thing that always I come back to when I think about Vakari, I say everything every different way, guys. You know who I'm talking about. It's just the fact that Deion Sanders wanted him and wanted him badly at Colorado. And if that guy says, I want you, despite how his defenses have played, he's huge for them. Do you have any honorable mentions we didn't get to across any position group, Rob?
You know, back to the pass catchers, I do think that you see Donovan Murph go from rotational player to potential starter here in 2026. That conversation is still very fluid, in my opinion, about who the receivers are going to be that start. And I think it's more about who is the most productive, more so than who actually is the starter. I think that you're going to have six, seven, maybe even eight rotation.
Sure, 6-7 out there.
I caught it coming out of my mouth, and I didn't want to do it, so I just went ahead and threw the eight in there. We have seen Kendall Browell say like 6 to 8 receivers that he wants to have active. I think Phil did the research and said something about this on one of the shows this week, that's been the trend with Kendall Browell's offenses in the past few years. So I expect there to be more guys to get involved there. We can say, quote unquote, starters. Everybody wants to hear about starters and projected depth charts and this, that, and the other. But I think that production is going to be what we really care about. I can't do it. So I don't know if anybody, I don't know who else out there is going to do it. If you're going to go back to the Spurrier era, can you name who started versus who didn't start at the receiver position in any given year?
Yeah.
Versus production, you know what I mean? Because there was games when early on, you take Ace Sanders, for example, where he wasn't starting, but then he kind of came on and burst onto the scene, and then he works his way into the starting lineup. Where did Bruce come in? You know, we can get lost in all that. So I'll look at production. I think Murph becomes one. That would be an honorable mention for me at that spot. And yeah, I think that kind of covers it. We can get into some secondary guys for sure. It's very deep back there, as always, with Torian Gray, but I'll let you take it. I know we're up against a break too.
Yeah, we're up against a little bit of a break. You know, I'll close it out with this. I do think that Nick Harbor has to take the next step. I think that he's just too much of a cheat code for them not to be able to figure it out. And I think with Kendall Browell, they will be able to. So, you know, despite us talking about, you know, we talked about Mazio, we talked about Jaden Gibson, we talked about Jaden Sellers, we talked about Donovan Murph. Like, I still think that Nick Harbor has to be the key to unlock it all. But we talk so much about Nick Harbor, I want to give some other guys some love. But, Rob, we do need to hit a quick break. When we get back, we are going to turn our attention to the NCAA basketball tournament expanding to 76 teams and what that means for South Carolina. And then we have the softball bracket as well. So we'll be able to talk a little bit about that, at least where they're going that first weekend. Because in my mind, Rob, it is very interesting.
Yeah, I agree. We'll be right back after this.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
Might as well give me one of those Carolina cars while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, Freddy.
You bet. J.C. Sherbert here had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck slash trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out, turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now. FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chiefs Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock himself, and joining me is Rob Williams of Four Quarter Fridays, SEC Sunday Night, thebigspur.com. We are both all over the place. We've talked about a ton of stuff, and we haven't even gotten to some of the topics that we wanted to get to, but that's not a bad thing, y'all. That just means we get to talk about it next week. A lot of this stuff is static, too, so we'll be looking for things that change, and we'll just have more up-to-date information. But, Rob, you know, the biggest thing that I think is in the college basketball world right now is just the fact that golly, we went from 37 at-large teams to 37 to 44 at-large teams. We still have the 32 automatic qualifiers. So, Rob, just your initial take on going to 76 teams for the NCAA basketball tournament, men's and women's.
I hate it. I think that it dilutes the field. You know, I don't want to be too old man yells at cloud, right? I think that when it comes to covering sports, Matt, we have to step back and have the realization that we are in the midst of major changes across all of our college athletics, and we're going to continue to see those major changes. All right, we saw a college football decide a champion one way up until the BCS was created, and then we kept that for over a decade. And then we had 10 years was it 11 years? Anyway, more than a decade of 14 playoff. Now we're at 12. We've seen the transfer portal come into play. We've seen NIL come into play in the past 10 years, okay? Less than that. So we consistently see change after change after change. So I want to preface all of this by saying I do think we have to be able to roll with the changes. Some of them we can speak out and say we like the direction this is going. We can project and see here are some pitfalls that may be existing for this thing or that thing. But in all in all, more ball, more exposure, more opportunities to have a fan experience, more opportunities for us to get on and talk about it and have the privilege that we – I don't want to sit here and sound selfish – I'm appreciative of the fact that we get to jump on here every week and during the week, and that we get to put stuff on message boards and write articles and cover the game. However, at what point do we value the game over the paycheck? I'm not sure that there's an end to that, Matt. I don't know that we can. I don't know that we reach a threshold where the game itself, the quality of the game, supersedes the paycheck. And here's what I see as the problem. If there's still a rise in viewers and there's still a revenue that is pouring in, even when the product is diminished, I don't know what the fail-safe is. I don't know what the stop is that ends not just expansion, but other things that dilute the game. When the result is still green enough to keep everybody moving forward, if that makes sense. But I don't like it. I don't think that we need this many teams. I don't think there's this many teams that are deserving. I don't think it breaks down well. I don't know how many people are really tuned in to Dayton as it is right now. I think that it will increase opportunities for betting. I think that it will increase opportunities for TV time throughout the week. Are we going to add a weekend? I don't know the answer to that. You may have the answer there. Is this going to be more extended weekday stuff prior to the first weekend, or are we adding an entire weekend to the tournament? And if that's the case, then maybe it grabs a little more attention. I think that we're putting more attention on a tournament in a sport that has a regular season problem. Can we put some more emphasis on the front end, figure out a way to get it out of football time? You know, there's a lot of issues here that I would say, you know, we probably should have fixed that thing over there instead of messing with the one thing that works. But that's just my opinion.
Oh, I think you're all over it. I mean, so just to answer the question about how they're going to do it, it's going to be the same kind of setup as the first four. You're just going to have, I believe it's going to be two sites.
Correct.
So you're going to have two sites, and one's going to stay in Dayton, and I believe the other one's going to be out west somewhere.
I'm making an argument for like Salt Lake, but I think that's
It's going to be something like that. And the way it's going to work is you're just going to have games that really start on like 2 o'clock
on Tuesday
and Wednesday. Yeah. And you're going to lead into Thursday, Friday. Now, you know, the NCAA tried to pawn this off as well. You know, the power conference teams wanted it. Now, don't get me wrong. The power conference teams did want it. Now, there's going to make some difference, too, because, you know, every time you play a game in the NCAA tournament, and technically these games will be NCAA tournament games, you get a credit, which is worth X amount of dollars. So it can help out, you know, the universities a little bit.
Yeah.
But really, it's just they're getting their behinds handed to them in settlements and litigation. And now they've actually, for the first time, this upcoming NCAA tournament, you're going to see alcohol commercials on TV, and it's because alcohol is willing to pay a lot of money for those commercial spots. So it's just a money grab. We can call it what it is. Now, my question for you, though, Rob, is does the move to 76 help South Carolina? Are we going to actually see more power conference teams get in, or are we going to see the opposite occur where, or maybe it's split down the middle where you have more mid-majors coming in?
I think regardless, I think the question of does it help South Carolina, in theory it does. If they are competitive in the SEC, if you bottom out like we saw them do the past 2 years, I think it helps them reset the staff faster. I think what this does is it shortens the lifespan of coaches more so than what we've seen it in the past. My co-host on SEC Sunday Night, which I will be on in just a few moments, tonight is Texas football night. We have Amanda Atwell on with us. Shameless plug. But my co-host, Craig McMichael, he is an advocate for the quick trigger when we talk about coaching changes. He is an advocate that we need to that teams need to make some of these changes faster, whether it's a football job or a basketball job. I've preached patience time and time and time again. What this does, Matt, is it makes the line a little more clear whether or not a coach is going to cut it. And so you're going to have guys that are going to have their tenures extended because they squeaked in. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have guys who get fired earlier because they didn't make the cut at a larger field. I think that what you're going to also see is if you have a school, maybe like a South Carolina, I think it's a good example, who makes it into that first, what is it now, 12? The first 12. What are we going to call that? Because that doesn't flow like first four.
Then we'll come up with something.
The tiny 12. They weren't big enough to make it to the real tournament. If you make it into the initial 12, how many years is that going to be okay? And how long is it going to be before that 12 is respected as the tournament? You know what I mean? There are so many people out there right now who don't think of the first being in the first four. They don't respect that as the tournament. It's not until you make it to the the round of 64 that people will say, oh yeah, well, here's your real tournament game in front of you right here, right? Like, here's where you can make a run. So does a South Carolina getting into the initial 12 teams, or the initial 16, I guess, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
12, right? Okay. Getting into the initial 12, can you do that twice, and then the goalpost moves? The line moves. Oh, now you need to get in past. We're not playing that anymore. That's enough.
Well, I think that's the case, Rob. I think you're going to see that actually, especially at, you know, I'm not going to use Texas. They just made a Sweet 16 run, but at Oklahoma, an Auburn, an Ole Miss. I mean, it's just one of those situations for me where, you know, I look at it and I think that if Lamont Parrish's seat wasn't already scalding hot, it is now hotter. And to, you know, your co-host Craig's point, I mean, you can buy rosters year over year now if you have the right resources and the right brand and all that. And so I think you are going to see more coaches getting fired. I think this is one of the things that has been coming down the pipeline for 2-3 years that I've been following. You know, was it going to go to what, 96 teams or 78 or 80 something? But I think it's why a lot of coaches just said, I'm out of this, man. Like, your Tony Bennett, your Roy Williams, your Coach K's, your Jim Bohans, like, they're just out of it. I mean, for me personally, I would like to see the mid-majors get rewarded more than the power conference schools, because, man, I do bracketology every year, and it's getting harder and harder to squint my eyeballs to make real sustainable differences in these teams' resumes. And – you know, I've always been a big proponent too of, like, you know, don't penalize the little schools. Let them go play themselves in the real tournament and make, you know, a Duke, a North Carolina, whoever the, you know, number one team is that year. Let them play against the middling power conference team. They beat them by 30 points anyway when they played during the regular season. Like, don't penalize the little kids and just take them to the slaughterhouse. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's going to – I hope more mid-majors get in. I mean, we saw the case with Miami, Ohio this past year where they probably – if they hadn't gone undefeated in the regular season, they wouldn't have been in. In a 76-team field, I hope they would be in. You know, does it help South Carolina? I think that if it's the same – and you kind of said earlier, Rob, so I'm kind of speaking the same thing you said, but if you get 8-9 wins in the SEC in regular season, you're in the tournament. It doesn't matter if it's a 76 or 68. Does not matter if you get to that 7-8 win mark. I'll just be interested to see how they do it, how the committee does it, honestly, Rob, because there's going to be situations where, you know, like, if you don't think this is going to happen, it's going to happen. When Oklahoma wants to get rid of Porter Moses and they are telling people in the selection committee, don't pick us. We don't want to be in the tiny 12, as Rob has coined it. We want to fire our coach. We don't even care about the run he can potentially make because they're not good enough to win national titles. So there's going to be so many different dynamics. And, you know, I think that for South Carolina fans, Rob, I don't know if it's going to be a realistic expectation or if it's going to be, you know, a fan expectation, probably somewhere in the middle. But if you don't get in this field 2 out of 5 years, and like that was the hope before, now it should be the realistic expectation.
No doubt about it. And you know what? Here's the biggest question, Matt. And this is one that I think we need to answer. How in the world are we going to function as a country when everything shuts down for 4 days and not just two? Because if we're going to run this thing on Tuesday, they can't run them all on Tuesday, Matt, right? No way they're running 6 games on a Tuesday. They're going to split it up.
Yeah.
We're going to run some on Tuesday. We're going to run some on Wednesday. The actual tournament that the rest of us recognize as round one is going to start on Thursday. So now the NCAA tournament initial week, this is a dream for basketball junkies like you and me, right? You're going to have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday NCAA tournament. Nothing is happening in corporate America. Shut it all down. Go ahead and start raising the chickens now because we're going to need extra wings for that week.
I got to start accruing PTO, Rob. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. I always take off Thursday, Friday. And sometimes I feel like I need to take off Monday too.
To recover. Absolutely. You need to sleep on that day.
But so, y'all, we talked about it earlier. Baseball obviously will not be making the NCAA tournament this year, and there will be a change in the coaching staff. and we will be talking about that. But we do need to touch on
the 10-second note I'll say on baseball, yeah. And then you give me that, is somebody said earlier in the chat when we first came on, do I think this team has quit? Absolutely not. They battled their tails off today. A one-run loss where they could have quit mid-game because they were down and out, and they mounted a comeback, and they got on their horse, and they kept swinging at it. And I think that says a lot about kind of the heart that Monty Lee has put into this team. There is still some fight, and we're looking forward to this year being over. Okay, take it away, because the Gamecocks softball team is headed to
UCLA. And Rob, what does UCLA softball and South Carolina softball mean to you?
Well, obviously there's been a little bit of a UCLA South Carolina women's sports. What does that mean to you, right? Yeah. There's a little bit of a rivalry mounting here, and the Bruins kind of have it, right? Took the Gamecocks behind the woodshed in the NCAA women's basketball championship game last year. A comeback in Columbia as the Bruins made their way over. Now a chance to return the favor for Ashley Chastain Woodard and her softball team going out to LA. You got Cal Baptist. You also have, correct me if I'm wrong here, is Fullerton, right?
Yeah, you got Cal. So you got South Carolina will face Cal State Fullerton, and then California Baptist will face UCLA. Winners play, double elimination, all that jazz to get through. So I love the storylines. I think that this – now my question for you, Rob, before we let you get out of here for SEC Sunday night is this a good or bad thing for South Carolina to be paired up with UCLA again?
I think you can spin it either way. It's going to be a tough matchup. There's no doubt about it. You have the history there. But I think there's a great storyline here, Matt, where the Bruins came in last year, looked down on the Gamecocks. Here they come from LA to Columbia. There's a stark difference, okay? Mm-hmm. The history of the programs, there's a difference. And South Carolina, in all honesty, was the better team and probably should have advanced last year, and they let it slip away, one out away. Now, an early rematch for the Gamecocks and the Bruins, an opportunity here for the Gamecocks to go and shock them. Not been the year that Ashley Chastain Woodard was expecting or hoping for. There was an overachieving year last year, and the fan base got really hyped up about this year. I think that she's still building this thing, and this is not a year that should be looked at as underachieving. I think it's building a program, Matt, and I think last year a lot of things went right, and they were able to go beyond what the expectations were. This year is more realistic for me. Okay, this is not it's not a shot at them. I think that just sometimes you come out at the mean, and this is still, as far as the program is concerned, a successful year. Just in comparison to last year, maybe not what everybody was expecting, but all that can go away, Matt Anderson. An early exit in the SEC tournament gone if the Gamecocks go to LA and take out the Bruins.
You know, man, the one thing I think about here is just Ashley Chastain Woodard's probably ahead of schedule in year two, despite last year's results. I mean, if you were to say, okay, in year two, you're going to be, in the NCAA tournament, I think most Gamecock fans would take it. The last thing I'll say before we get out of here is the fact that, look, don't count the Gamecock softball team out. They just went to Alabama and gave Alabama everything they could handle, the number one team in the country on the road. And now they're going to UCLA. They played a top five schedule. There's not going to be anything daunting for the Gamecocks. It's just going to be if they are good enough and have the timely hits and the timely strikeouts. But I know my eyes will be glued to the TV this weekend. We want to thank everybody. I know we got to get Rob out of here, but thank you, everybody, who joined us tonight. When you hang out with us, you give us the most valuable thing you have, your time. So we appreciate it. We'll be back better than ever next Sunday night, and we can't wait to see you again. We hope you have a great rest of the week. And come join us on thebigspur.com. $1 gets you coverage until September. We would love to have conversations with you throughout the rest of the week there, too. $1, it's the best deal on the internet right now, and your wife or your husband won't get mad at you. So come on over to the Big Spur, Gamecock Central. You get it all for $1 until September. We will talk to you soon, and have a great week, everyone. See you.